And I'd like to introduce the second of tonight's speakers, Eve.
Thanks, Daniel.
Thanks. My name's Eve, I'm an addict. Oh God, this is strange. I need to say I'm really, really anxious tonight, overly anxious. And so anyway, let's see what's going to come out. I was thinking about my first meeting that I ever went to, and I remember 2 years before I cleaned up thinking, I'll try these meetings, I'd heard about them, and I thought on the way I'll just drop a few Valium just to calm me down. So I remember going to this meeting, and I remember there was a pool table there, and I laid on the pool table, and I kind of, someone woke me up at the end of the meeting, and that was my first ever experience of NA, and I thought, yeah, that's not for me. And, after that, I mean, at that time, I'll tell you a bit about my past so that you can kind of understand where I'm coming from. I think I've always been an addict from a very young age. My mother left when I was four, and I went to live with my grandparents, and my dad kind of was around. And when she left, I think something, my whole world changed, I think. You know, the abandonment, and I internalised it all and thought it was all about me. I thought I was bad somewhere, and that's why she left. So, I think from that time, early, the trust in the world had gone. You know, I always kind of would hide from people, and was really basically a scared child. But what I did know is I didn't like who I was, and I didn't like being in my own body. And the shame, I had a lot of shame when she left, because it was like it was my fault. If I was a good girl, then she wouldn't have left. And I remember from a young age kind of stealing out my dad's pockets and, like money, I would kind of do it blatantly and sit there and just take money out of his pocket. And I started doing that, and then I would kind of nick the chocolates out of the cupboard, and I would also nick food out of the cupboard, and you know, just to try and kind of feel something. I didn't know what it was I was feeling, but I knew I didn't like who I was, and I always wanted to be someone else. And I didn't realise the feelings were shame either until, obviously, I got into recovery, and then I understood. From the age of 8, 9, there was kind of a lot of abuse going on at home, the inappropriate behaviour that wasn't okay. So I kind of didn't feel safe at home either, and, you know, I always felt like I was living in this world where, you know, there was one reality and I was kind of in a different reality, but couldn't understand my own reality. So from the age of 10, I was not going to school. I was out thieving at Woolworths and stuff like that. I would always have to nick something, always. And I started smoking at a very early age. I started nicking the cigarettes and that, and then going down the shop and buying them, and my nan would send me to the shop and I'd kind of nick the tea and then, you know, keep the money. So my behaviour from a very early age was not okay, and obviously very distressed somewhere. From the age of 11, 12, I kind of started hanging around with boys and thought, you know, okay, this is good. And then at 13, 14, I started running away from home and couldn't bear to be there. But, you know, again, the shame and not feeling good enough. Never felt the messages that I had about myself was that I was stupid. You know, I didn't fit in anywhere. You know, I always fitted in with the girls at school because we'd all act out together, so that was okay. And 13, 14, I started going in pubs and drinking and eventually, at 16, I left school. I didn't really go to school, honestly. I'd get my mark and I'd leave. And at 16, I fell pregnant with my daughter. Just turned 16, I was. And the shame of that, that my father sent me to a mother and baby home and said, you know, there's no way you can keep her. You're not good enough. You can't look after her. And actually, he was right, really. I couldn't. But, you know, I wanted this child badly because I wanted someone to love me. I wanted someone who was there who would love me. And anyway, I went to the mother and baby home. And again, you know, lots of mixed messages at home. They sent me to a mother and baby home where it was run full of nouns. And yet they'd let me come home weekend. So it kind of, nothing made sense at home, nothing. And anyway, my sister had already got pregnant at 14. I had a child adopted. And then when I had my daughter, which was, you know, it's like a child having a child, really. She said to me, you know, if you want to keep her, I'll be there for you. And so I decided to keep her. And, yeah, that was a difficult time. And anyway, she was... she was little, and you know, as a mother, I never felt good enough. I always had this message that she deserved more, she deserved better, and that I never felt good about myself inside. So, and, you know, I had the messages going on in my head, you know, you're no good, you're this and all that. And the thing about the shame is I continued to kind of reinforce that shame by my behaviour, like thieving, you know, going with boys, kind of acting out, getting drunk, you know, so I reinforced the shame. And at 19, I met my husband who, I met him one day, we moved in the next, that's how it was, you know, that looking for kind of someone to want me, someone to be there for me. You know, and he liked me and he wanted to be with me, and it was like that was enough. It, you know, my self-esteem, my self-worth, it was like it was on the floor. And, you know, anyone that paid me attention, it was great. I thought I was okay then. So he moved in with me, and it was a very abusive relationship. And the mad thing is that I actually married him thinking that he would change. He would change. If we got married, he would change, not me. He would change. And I didn't trust men anyway. I didn't really like men, honestly. You know, they'd been my abusers, so I wasn't really... I didn't realise I was angry with them. I really didn't. I thought I loved men, but, you know, again, later in life, when I looked at it, it was like, you know, I had this... you couldn't trust them, and you couldn't trust women because they leave you, and you couldn't trust men because they're inappropriate about things. Anyway, eventually, I'm in that marriage, and I'm taking a lot. You know, I'm drinking a lot. I'm taking... I went to the doctors for slimming pills and then sleeping pills. I mean, I was 7.5 stone. The doctor was giving me black bombers, and... so I was using them to the extreme, and it was a difficult time living with it. It was awful, actually, and it wasn't a happy time. It, you know, I look back on that time as one of the kind of worst times, actually. And then eventually he went to prison, and in that time, though, he's like a thief, and... you know, I'm kind of going out with him to thieving and stuff like that, something I hadn't really done. And I was doing checkbooks and stuff like that. And so I got into a life of crime. I always hung about with guys that were, like, thieves and all that. And, you know, a job, I didn't know what a job was. I didn't know how to work. I just didn't... I didn't know how to support myself either. I was quite helpless when I think about it. And... eventually, I met another guy while I was with him, and, you know, I was never faithful to him anyway because, you know, because of his behaviour, so my head would kind of seek revenge from him, and, you know, I'd do it by sleeping with other guys, so that would kind of show him, even though he didn't know about it. And all it did was really my self-esteem and self-worth, again, on the floor, really. And... I ended up with someone else who was a thief, and he bought a house out of kind of earnings that were, you know, came from somewhere. And the police came one day, and we lost our house anyway. I thought we was going to move to the country, you know, the nice home, and, you know, I was going to settle down and life was going to be wonderful. I think I was always in fantasy land. I think I always, you know, yeah, it was in fantasy, really. What I wanted it to be, not what my life really was. I don't think I ever kind of was in the reality. And I was with him 8 years, and then he got put in prison, and he got 8 years in prison. And I came back to London, and I came back to a flat in London, and I was drinking a lot at that time. I mean, I was always drinking from a young age, but I never ever saw a drink as a problem. And then when I came back to London, everyone I knew who I'd left behind was doing heroin. And I remember going to a friend's house and her saying, why don't you try this? It's really good. And anyway, I did. I thought, you know, they was all being sick on it, and I thought, oh, I'll try that. And I was really sick on it. That's where my head was. That's how mad I was. And so I took the heroin, and, you know, at first it was fine. And then after a few months, I realised, you know what, I remember looking in the mirror and saying, you know, thinking, this has got a hold of me. This is, like, really got a hold of me, and it's really quite scary. And it is like the devil's drug, I think, you know. It really is scary. And, you know, by then my daughter was, what, 12, 13? And she was around all this. She see all this. She see all addicts and all that. I mean, that's all she had in her life, really, at that age. You know, I didn't even give her a second thought, honestly. It was all about my drugs. It was everything to me. And I always prided myself on being a good mother. And the reason I was a good mother is because I never, ever left her like my mother left me. So any other behaviour was okay because I didn't leave her. I always had my daughter with me, drug houses, crack houses, you name it. She was there, and I was a good mother. And when she was about 16, she'd met someone. And, you know, I'm in and out of kind of using now, and you know, I'm a mess, really. And then I got into crack, and that was it then. That was the kind of... But I sold all my home. I would sell things around her, really. It's like, yeah, but we, you know... And she would kind of beg and plead with me, Mum, you know, do we have to have these people in our house? And I was like, yeah, they're friends, love. And, you know, totally, you know, totally dismissing her. And... you know, talking about that, and yeah, it's a lot of shame there. And, you know, I do forgive myself today, and I have to kind of move on. But it's something I never want to forget because, you know, I'd actually become the abuser, really. And the first time I had to say that out loud was, you know, it was just horrendous. I just think, you know, that I abused the one person in my life that I really cared about, and I did, and it was abuse, and it was emotional abuse. And, you know, I have to take responsibility for that, and it's not something I want to forget because I never want to go back there. Anyway, she started using heroin, and you know what, I was just like crazy. I started giving her heroin because I thought my warped thinking was that, you know, if I gave it to her, she wouldn't have to go out oysting and doing checkbooks and doing all this kind of stuff, you know, that I would kind of protect her somewhere. I thought I was protecting her by giving it to her. Eventually, she got pregnant, and she had a little girl. So my granddaughter was, what, 2? We was both out shoplifting, we was both injecting, we was squatting, we was a mess. My granddaughter was, social services were involved, and they said, you know, that she couldn't have her. So she got clean, my daughter got clean. And her getting clean kind of inspired me to get clean. And, you know, 6 months before I went into treatment, I knew I wanted to get clean. I just, you know, I went mad. I went over a few times on the heroin. I'm lucky to be here, really. And, so then I went into treatment, and I came out. She was still clean. She was a year clean. I came out, you know, wanting to talk about all the stuff that I'd done to her and all that. And of course she was like, you're a good mother, Mum, you've always been there. And you know, she couldn't look at that stuff. And you know, I can see I was just eager to kind of, you know, for her to forgive me. It was so important that she forgives me. Anyway, a year after that, she went back out there. She went out using again. And, you know, that was horrendous. She got into a relationship with someone where it was abuse. And, you know, I'd been in, I think, you know, at first I would give her money. I would, you know, want to protect her. And she'd come home, I'd say, have a bath, and I'd get her all clean clothes. I'd want to, you know, kind of prop her up and all that. And I did that for a few years. And, you know, in that time I'm in the meetings, I'm kind of connecting with NA, and but I'm also very angry. And that was another thing, you know, from an early age, my early relationships was all connected through anger. I was angry at my mum for leaving, I was angry at my dad for abuse, I was angry at my nan for not stepping in. I was so angry and rageful. And I didn't realise that till not long ago, actually, that all my early relationships was the only way I knew how to connect with them was for anger. So she was out there, and I was like three years clean. And she got married to this guy. She was like anorexic. I thought she was going to die. And at the wedding, you know, I was kind of trying to be there for her, and you know, my guilt was, you know, clouding my, you know, boundaries and stuff like that. Not that I really knew what they was, but I remember seeing her and I thinking, she's going to die. She was so thin. And when she put her wedding dress on, she undressed, I had to go out of the room and just sobbed. I cried. It was just, you know, it was so sad. And I think that day at her wedding, I picked up a drink, telling myself that I was going to social drink now. I'm 3 years clean, now I can social drink. You know, not recognising all the kind of feelings that were coming up for me around her, the fear. And so I drank for a few weeks. I drank for a couple of months, and it was like, you know, I never got drunk. I'd make it weekends, very, very controlled. And what I realised when I put it down, because I did, I thought, you know what, I'm so scared of going back there that I need to stop drinking. And I did that day. And that was 16 years ago. And I just, you know, the feelings were, you know, I just couldn't go back into that place, that hell, really. And it was hell. And, you know, through recovery, what happened then, I started to do voluntary work. I started to do City Roads voluntary work, and I started to, you know, start working with addicts. And I thought, well, I'm good at that. I know about drugs. I thought I knew it all, actually, at that time. You know, I thought I'd be good at this. And I was really a good listener because, you know, I wasn't very good at sharing my own stuff, really. About that time, I got into therapy, too. So I had a sponsor and I had therapy, you know, and I had the meetings, which were... I needed a lot of support at that time because, you know, from then on, my granddaughter was put into foster care, and then her father cleaned up and he had her. So she went to live in Bristol. And so I thought I needed to step in as the surrogate mother. So because of my abandonment and all that, I didn't want her to go through the same. So I used to kind of take on holiday, and I'd go there every weekend to see her and be on the phone every day. So up until, I mean, my daughter was out there up until 3 years ago. So, yeah. So I did voluntary work out there, and eventually I got a job in the field of addiction. And, you know, I had to look at my behaviour. I had to look at... you know, while in therapy, I had to look at that early childhood, and I had to, you know, I don't blame my parents today. I really don't. They were sick, and they was, you know, they wasn't well themselves. I don't make that behaviour okay, though. I don't say, you know what, that behaviour was okay, because it wasn't. But I can let go of it, and I'm not angry about it today. So, my dad died in recovery too. He died 5 years ago. And at that time, I got cancer. And at that time, it was a really difficult time because I had him dying, and I didn't know whether it was terminal or not, what I had. So, you know, I went through that, and I managed to get through that without picking up, which was, for me, massive. I still had my daughter out there, and I, like I said, I always thought I'd abandoned her out there. But what I learned through the fellowship and Al-Anon too, I went to Al-Anon too, and it was about, you know, I needed to be boundaried with her, I needed to say no, and I needed to stop giving her money, and I needed to stop enabling her in her addiction. And so I tried that with her, and at first it was just so alien to me, because my first, you know, instinct was to want to take care of her and to rescue her from that place. And, you know, I couldn't. It was her journey, and she had to do it her way. You know, I remember dragging her to kind of counsellors and drug clinics and saying, tell them what you're using. No, she's using cocaine. Tell the truth. And she went into treatment a couple of times, and I would be there, and I would take her trainers up, and I would make sure she was all right, and she had everything. And then she'd come out, and the disappointment, I would think, you know, it was hard. I mean, it was harder having her out there than it actually was me, because I always felt like I could look after myself, and, you know, thinking that I'd abandoned her in that world was, you know, it was really, really difficult. Through my work, I went into train. I went into college, and that was hard because, you know, I had all these messages, you're stupid, you know, you've got no schooling, you've never done anything. It's like I've never had a job in my life. And I went into college, and I trained to be a counsellor, and it was something I'd always wanted to do. And I think it was because I was a good listener and because I didn't share my stuff. I was always looking after others. Even from a young age, I would look after my nan, and I would always caretake other people's feelings. I would always be about them. And anyway, I trained, I went to college, and I got my master's 3 years ago, which for me was massive because, you know, the early childhood memories, you know, and the messages that I got was that I was stupid. And actually, I wasn't stupid. It was just that I had so much going on in my life as a child that I couldn't, you know, I couldn't focus, I couldn't concentrate, I couldn't do anything. It was just like I was so full of feelings constantly. I was walking about just like ready to explode, really, and I had nowhere to put them. And so I did that, and I currently work as a therapist now, and I've been doing that for 15 years, you know, but the last 8, you know, as a trained therapist. And 3 years ago, my daughter went into treatment. She actually did a chair here about 3-4 months ago, and she's now 3 years clean next month, which is, do you know what, I am so proud of her. I can't tell you how proud of her I am. And you know what, it's just, you know, she amazes me. I feel like I know her today. I feel like, you know, for the first time we've got, you know, a really healthy mother and daughter relationship. Because when I cleaned up, I didn't know how to be a mother. I didn't, you know, I remember sitting in treatment and I was going up to see her, and they said, just be you. And I said, well, I don't know who I am. I don't know who I am. So, and as for being a mother, I didn't know how to be a mother. And, you know, over the years, I've kind of had to learn that tough love and not, you know, it's not all about me. And it's like, you know, my daughter grew up with the same kind of stuff. She cared, took me. She was like the little mini mother. She was like adult child, really. So she was always looking out for me, always looking out for me. And so we've in recovery, we've had to kind of reverse that role. And today I am a mother, and I feel like a mother. And I'm not a perfect mother, and I get it wrong. And we have our arguments, but we talk, and she's able to talk about her child stuff. And I'm able to listen today without being defensive or without denying her reality, because her reality was the messages that she got, which, again, was that she wasn't worth anything, because, in my world, my drugs were everything. And, my addiction came first before anyone. And so her reality was that she wasn't worth it and she wasn't this. And you know what? The patterns, their patterns go down. They get passed down. And I remember him saying to me in treatment, "Eve, break the pattern." And at that time, I thought I'll stop using drugs. Because, later in, when I was in recovery, my mother, who'd moved to Northumberland and had four other children, going through therapy, I went back to see her. I hadn't seen her except once when she came back when I was 11. And then kind of abandoned me again. But she was also an alcoholic. Now, we didn't live together. I didn't know she was an alcoholic at that time. So, the kind of women in my family, in a lot of my family, my brother's 10 years clean too. But, we was all addicts, and they said, break the pattern. And I the pattern was, that she didn't feel good about herself too. She felt worthless. She felt, that her reality was that she wasn't any good. So we talk about that stuff today. We can talk about it, and I can affirm her today. And I have a lot of respect for my daughter today, a lot of respect. And I respect her as a individual with her own needs and wants, and her own journey. I don't get involved too much. Well, maybe a little bit, I do. But, it's her journey, and, she's very capable. So I like our relationship today. I've also, my granddaughter's also just had, I've got a two-year-old great-grandson and a three-month-old granddaughter. And do you know what? They are my world. I just cannot tell you how. And, for a while with my granddaughter, she went through an abusive relationship, and she also started cutting herself and, really horrendous stuff. But again, she didn't have her mother there either. And, I'm glad to say today that she's, she's with someone really nice, a really nice guy who really kind of, respects her, and she tries today, and she's a good mother. I mean, I watch her with her children, and I think, what happened to her? Because I wasn't like that. And, she amazes me. She amazes me how she does it. And, my life's pretty good today. I work a lot with families today too, the family of addicts, and what I realise, it is a family disease, and they need as much support, because I've been kind of both sides now, and I've done a lot of work recently on codependency stuff and trauma stuff. Last year I did a lot of work on that. I still struggle with relationships with kind of guys. I'm in one at the moment. I've been with him 3 years. I still struggle with it. I still struggle with trust issues. I still, my head can still sabotage things. It's funny, my therapist said today, "You're still so overly responsible." And it's like, what's that about? It's like the, hides all the anxiety. And it's like, I can be. And I need to let go of that a bit. And I can be quite controlling. I can be judgmental. I can be, and get jealous. I can have all these feelings. But you know what? I try to tell myself today, it's okay that I'm like that. You know, I try so hard to be perfect. It's not that I know what perfect is, but it's like I always needed to get it right. I needed to... I always felt like, you know, even going to college, I thought, I should know that. And it's like, well, why should I know it? I've never done it before. So it's like going, you know, getting into recovery for me, it's like every step of the way felt like I was learning something new constantly. And, you know, it's been a journey. And, you know, I'm so grateful to these rooms. And I've got such good friends in here. And, you know... Thank you. I don't think I'd be where I am today without it. Well, I know I wouldn't. And, you know, I try to practice the steps as best I can. Again, you know, I'm a bit of a procrastinator. It's not perfect. And I just do the best I can on any given day. And as I said, I feel so grateful today. I can't tell you, you know, if you'd have asked me 5 years ago what your life was like, I'd say, shit, and it's, sorry, and I don't want to, and it's hard to be in recovery. And today, you know, things are falling into place. You know, they say, keep coming to meetings and you kind of, things will change. Well, that's certainly my experience. I mean, beyond my wildest dreams, really, you know. And I'm a lot more capable than what I ever felt, you know. You know, being in recovery for me was being... about being independent emotionally, financially, and not depending on others. Anyway, I could still look to others to make it all right for me. I was saying to my daughter today, I was saying, I'm going to talk about you, you know, I'm going to blame you for my drink when you was getting married. And she laughed, and I said, the difference is that one time I would have, today I can't do that. So we was laughing about that. So... thanks, everybody, and I'm going to leave it there. Thank you.